Good morning and welcome to this month's Hancock & Whitney Bank's Economic Update Call. Hancock Bank and Whitney Bank provide this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or its affiliates. If you have any questions, please send them to Luther at luther.mcdougall@whitneybank.com. Today we have John Portwood, Chief Investment Officer, Greg Hudlewski, and Jeff Tangus, Investment Directors. And this time, Luther McDougall is going to be the moderator. And with that, I'll go ahead and pass it on to Luther.
Thank you, Ashley. Good morning. John, you're up first today. The House and the Senate were not able to agree upon a continuing resolution to fund the government. So effective today, many government services will be shut down. What impact will this have on the economy and the markets? And is there a potential solution in sight?
Okay, I guess first I probably should mention that, we all know, of course, that this particular, shutdown is due to some, tense discussions over Obamacare, which is going into effect, as we speak, and some, perhaps trying to delay it a bit or create some new modifications. But in any case, In the run-up to this point, where companies have been doing various and sundry things to adjust for the Affordable Care Act as it is implemented, it's probably likely that that has done more damage to the economy, in terms of, say, reducing growth or growth potential than the shutdown will cause in its entirety. And that will probably be the case going forward. We've had something like 20 shutdowns, I guess, in the past. That might not be the exact number, but it's been pretty close to that. The last one was in December of 1995, lasted 21 days. The range has been from about 3 days to 21 days. And, 30 years ago when this was happening, there wasn't a lot of hoopla around these events, but in recent years, I guess, say the last, 10 to 15 years, of course, threats of government shutdowns have been, created a lot more discussion in the media and discussions of destruction of the economy and all sorts of things. But at most, if we were shut down, if the government was shut down, let's say, for a month or two or several months, it might have an impact on the economy, but the data we see from various research sources suggests that about 800,000 to 1 million non-essential government employees would be furloughed, and that's probably not enough to put a significant dent in the economy. Some economists have estimated that a long-term shutdown might, be as much as 1% of GDP or cost about 1% of GDP, but I'm not sure that's universally believed, and probably most economists would suggest the impact would be even less than that. How long might this one last? It's kind of hard to say. The general feeling is that if it lasts more than a couple of days, that more and more pressure will be put on the politicians to come to some kind of consensus to get things back to normal. But in any case, at this point, it would appear that the shutdown will not be particularly meaningful to the economy. Now, it might have some meaning to the markets. Around all these shutdowns in the past, there's been considerable volatility. We're already seeing it. Depending on how the news goes from day to day, that's probably going to have some impact on the markets. And in fact, some folks have suggested that the politicians are watching the market more than they are anything that's happening in the economy, and that if the markets get too disturbed and drop too far too fast, then, they'll come in and probably try to, reach an agreement maybe faster, which would, of course, cause the market to bounce back up. So, the bottom line as we go through these things is probably won't be the last one we'll have in coming years. Considering the political situation, we can expect a lot of noise and sound and fury and volatile markets around them, but if the past is any guide to the future, things eventually get worked out and we go back to normal, whatever that normal happens to be. And I guess at this point, I probably should mention something about what the economy looks like currently from a leading indicator standpoint. you know, last month when we had this discussion, the leading indicators were positive, and they still are. In fact, depending on which indicator you look at or which group of indicators, some indicators actually look a little stronger from a trend basis than they did a month ago. But unfortunately, when you look at these leading indicators and trends in leading indicators, you can't always get a good read about what kind of economy you're going to have. You simply get a pretty good picture of whether you're going to have a recession or not. And the numbers do look strong enough to suggest that we are not in imminent danger of having a recession. But it looks like we're probably still stuck in that tepid growth mode where you're looking at, say, 2% growth plus or minus. Second quarter was on the third estimate, indicated at 2.5%. Current estimates suggest that 2 to 2.5% range is probably reasonable for this quarter. Several leading indicators that we, not, I'm sorry, several coincident indicators that we look at are sort of above the zero line, and if the zero line is considered, let's say, potential economic growth, which at this point is considered to be about 2.5%, then you might say that this last quarter was probably somewhere in the 2 and 2.5% range, as a guess. You know, that we haven't gotten that number yet, and it won't come out for I think a week or two. But it looks like we're pretty much where we have been for a while. Year-over-year GDP at last report, that was the quarter ending in June, was about 1.6%, and it's likely that if we have a 2% quarter in the third quarter, if that registers 2%, then we're probably still probably sub 2% year-over-year growth, which could be kind of where we are in a new normal situation, where you're 2-2.5% instead of 3-3.5% that we were used to in the past. We'll just have to see how that works out over time. But it still looks like the idea of the economy reaching escape velocity and generating 3% plus GDP growth consistently is sometime in the future, and we're not quite there yet. So in any case, it looks like no recession. Leading indicators are still positive, and the shutdown, unless things really develop in a way that we haven't seen in the past, will probably be simply a blip.
Thank you, John. Kind of a follow-up question. Given that it sounds like the current government shutdown won't have much of an impact, particularly if it's short-term on the economy or the markets, we still have another impasse that's out there, and that's raising the debt ceiling. You have any thoughts on what that battle looks like, and will it have the same type of effects or more severe impacts on the market if we can't come to some type of agreement?
I suppose if we couldn't come to an agreement on the debt ceiling and that dragged on for a while, that might have more of an impact on the economy and the general mood of investors and everyone generally, because of the noise the media would make about a potential default on the debt. However, the people who have looked at this issue fairly carefully tell us that we owe about $25 billion a month on the debt. We've got 3 or 4 times that much coming in taxes, and the Treasury could prioritize their payments in any manner they saw fit. So the idea of default is probably a really, extremely improbable event, although it's already being talked about in the media. But as we know, the media likes to make a lot of noise about government shutdowns and debt ceilings. And so there's going to be a lot of noise around this one. There's going to be a lot of discussion about debt, our future debt, considering liabilities from Social Security, Medicare, and now Medicaid, and also the new entitlements based on the health care law. We can't afford these things going forward. Everybody knows that. I can't remember how many years in the future it becomes a problem given current CBO projections, but I'm guessing, you know, within 10 years, it could be a fairly big issue, and so this is going to come up from time to time. Europeans are already there, and they're out of money, and, you know, their welfare state is imploding before our eyes. So it's probably just a matter of time before we're going to have to address things more seriously. But at the present, I guess, it's going to be a lot of talk about the debt ceiling and a lot of argument about debt and liabilities, future liabilities, but in the end it will probably there'll probably be some sort of consensus, and it will be, you know, the can will be kicked down the road, I guess, one more time, and probably the first of many can kickings until we finally reach the point where a financial crisis of some sort, you know, makes the politicians finally come to some agreement on what they will have to do about these entitlements going forward. So again, the debt ceiling is not an automatic default. You've got enough money to fund probably as much of the government as can be funded in a government shutdown situation. So, you know, that's not going to be a serious issue as far as the default is concerned. Now, obviously, if you couldn't agree on a debt ceiling, you know, for months on end, then that could have some sort of, you know, impact on the economy and the markets. But, you know, at this point, we think there'll probably be a lot of discussion. Some sort of compromise will be reached, and we'll move on until we get to the next debt ceiling or the next, you know, government shutdown situation. And, you know, it looks like this sort of thing is going to continue for a very, very long time, periodically, until something finally permanent is developed. So, I guess, and that comes up, October 17th, I think, Luther, is that?
I believe that's the drop dead date that's been set.
Yeah, so I guess we're going to go from government shutdown to, you know, the debt service issue fairly quickly. And I imagine that is going to cause some disturbance in the market. It already has. But, you know, we're likely to get through it just like we have in the past and move on down the road.
All right. Thank you, John. Just a reminder, if anybody has any questions, please email me at luther.mcdougall, that's M-C-D-O-U-G-A-L, at whitneybank.com. Next up is Greg. Are you there?
Yeah.
All right. The S&P 500 was up over 3% in September, which was one of the best monthly gains since January of this year. Given all the things that we just discussed, why was the market so strong in September?
Well, the government shutdown since 1976, I Googled it this morning about 18 times, but I think, you know, the market's looking ahead, and I think really what's driving the market is what we talked about in past discussions is the quantitative easing. You've still got a lot of dollars floating around, and I think, you know, primarily because everyone was anticipating that the tapering would start this past month, and then the Fed really reversed itself. I think the market just reacted positively, and you're still suffering from, you know, that Tina syndrome. There is no alternative. So you're not earning anything in money markets. You're not really earning much in bonds, and money just keeps pumping into the stock market. Unfortunately, earnings aren't reflecting that in terms of corporate America, and so that divergence that we discussed before, where the economy is still just limping along sideways, yet stock prices keep going up, it's kind of a dangerous situation, really. That's not a very good basis for market increases. So I think on the horizon, it doesn't appear that we're getting the stronger second half that everyone's been anticipating, and I think that just puts equities at more risk going forward. We really haven't had a meaningful correction, but again, I think one of the main reasons is that the market ran up this past month was primarily because the Fed didn't begin to taper. It'll be interesting to see down the road once the Fed actually does pull the trigger on tapering whether the market has factored that in and has digested it. You know, we still probably will get some kind of an initial market reaction, but hopefully it'll be a muted reaction. But, again, of more concern is that we really need to see some earnings growth and some growth in the economy, and it just it's just not clear yet, I think. So stocks still seem to be at risk of some type of a correction or retreat. Again, we're not looking for any kind of a serious bear market type correction, but, you know, some kind of pullback would not be surprising to us.
All right, thank you, Greg. That's a great segue into the question I have for Jeff. And Jeff, that is that, as Greg mentioned, the Fed was supposed to taper its bond buying program last month, but it did not. Can you give us a little bit of an update on what happened and why, and when will tapering actually begin, or your best estimate?
Sure. Well, just as a little background, the Fed has been on a program of buying $85 billion a month in Treasury securities and mortgage-backed securities in an effort to keep longer-term rates low, primarily to spur the housing market. And you know, their out loud justification was they needed to get unemployment down. And as we've heard from John, we've seen some improvement from unemployment over the last several months. So everyone was pretty much expecting, generally the market was expecting the Fed to go ahead and make good on their intimation that they were going to make a modest reduction in 85. They weren't going to quit buying, but they were going to reduce it perhaps 10 or 15 billion to 60, call it $60 billion a month. Still very much a stimulus to the marketplace, but not quite as much, taking a little bit away. Well, the Fed, for some reason, got cold feet. They didn't come out and say out loud exactly what it was that scared them away from starting the program, but the market had pretty much fully discounted in the Fed to begin their tapering program. So it would have been a very easy and in a lot of respects a very logical time to go ahead and get started. It was almost a free pass for the Fed to go ahead and start this program because the market had already factored it in. Well, the Fed decided not to. They were perhaps a little shocked at how much rates had risen since they first started hinting about beginning this program. We've had a dramatic rise in interest rates in general. That was having some effect on the housing market. The higher mortgage rates were slowing, looked like it was slowing the housing market somewhat. So there were probably several things that they were looking at, but in the end they just decided that they weren't going to begin the program, and that surprised the market. Interest rates started to drop. Certainly the stock market had a heyday. Risk assets in general took off because of the fact that all this liquidity, as Greg was saying, sloshing around the system, has a way of finding its way into risk assets. So it was a good day for the emerging markets. It's been a good couple of weeks for emerging markets, for stocks, and for bonds as well. So that's a little bit of background on how we got to where we are right now. The Fed, you know, is saying it's still looking for some substantial improvement in the labor markets before they really halt the purchases, and it's a little bit unclear as to what that number really is. Some people seem to think it's around 7% unemployment, which we would hit somewhere around mid next year, probably based on their projections. So if they're going to be on that schedule, they probably have to get started pretty soon. They're going to meet in December. That's probably the next logical time for them to discuss it. And it would be, I think, shocking to almost everyone if they didn't get started after that meeting. So the market basically now is it's not a question of if, it's just when the Fed's going to begin the program. And a lot of it, of course, is dependent upon the unemployment rate. I suspect part of their concern is that although the employment rate has fallen dramatically, most of that improvement in unemployment is because the participation rate, fewer people are actually considering themselves as part of the workforce. So the participation rate has dropped. We're getting a lot of the jobs that are created are part-time jobs. And also low-wage service-type jobs. People speculate that may be partly due to the Obamacare legislation and the effect that that's having on full-time employment. So that's probably a part of their concern as well, something they're going to be watching. But it does look like it's probably going to be around December. So probably the only other major thing that's going on with the Fed right now is in the last month, Larry Summers pulled his name as a candidate for Bernanke's replacement. that kind of left Janet Yellen as the odds-on favorite. And if she is appointed, then it's likely to be a continuation of the Bernanke policies, which is a dovish policy, more likely to be accommodative in the marketplace like Ben Bernanke. So it's been a very active month as far as the Fed is concerned, and it's probably going to continue to be for a couple months. But the general effect of it has been lower interest rates, where we've seen about a 35 or 40 basis point drop in rates since the Fed decided not to taper. So stay tuned.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. That's a pretty good update on what's happening domestically, both economically and for our markets. But as we all know, what goes on internationally does have an impact on both of those, whether it's the economy or the markets. We've heard some rumblings coming out of Europe lately with some continuing issues in Italy and Spain, but we also have more problems in the Mideast. And, John, if you will, give us a couple of minutes or a brief update on what's happening in the Middle East, specifically with Syria and the U.S.'s involvement, if any, in that ongoing conflict and how it might impact us.
Well, sadly to say, the state of crisis and politically and economically in the Middle East is probably going to continue indefinitely. This reminds me of something I've seen before back in the late 60s and into the 70s when we had the oil crisis. In any case, from the Syrian standpoint, for looking at that situation, negotiations concerning the destruction of poisonous gas munitions will be lengthy. The disposal process, assuming that it really does begin, we don't even know that yet, will also be lengthy, with some estimates suggesting it could take more than a year to find all the caches of weapons and deal with them in a safe manner. The situation on the ground in Syria, with Islamic militants apparently in control of a large portion a rebel territory, certainly complicates the issue. And some of you who've been paying attention to this sort of thing in the news lately have probably seen reports that large caches of weapons, not only in Libya but in Syria, but also in Libya, have been probably confiscated or seized, by Islamic militants and Al-Qaeda connected folks in that region. So it's a very serious situation, probably no good way to handle it easily, and we probably won't find out what's going to happen there for quite some time. And it's likely that the current negotiations surrounding Syria and how to deal with the weapons and how to come to some sort of agreement to get some people in there to find them and dispose of them is going to take quite some time. So we just have to wait and see. But when you consider Egypt, Syria, Lebanon, the most of the Middle East, I guess, outside of Saudi Arabia, you've got a lot of really bad things going on with no really good solution in the near term. So it's something that we'll just have to, deal with and pay attention to as time passes. And I may not imagine it's going to be with us for quite some time, unfortunately.
All right. Thank you, John. It sounds like we have a lot of things where we're kind of in a wait-and-see attitude. At this point, we don't have any questions. We want to thank everybody for participating, and we look forward to hopefully giving you some updated information in our next call, which should be, I believe, the first Tuesday in November. Thank you, everyone, for participating.